On a mission, on a quest, on a search for discovering the truth. Join us on our journey to discovering a savior.
All right, welcome to Your Church Friends Podcast. I'm Chris.
I'm Njordur.
So my dad had, for years, told us that we were the Basque, the people who are like in between France and Spain, like those people. For years, he tell us that. And so when we had Remy and she came out blonde hair, blue eyes.
Which is kind of in line with
Basque. And I'm darker complected and brown eyes. He was like, see, I told you we're Basque. She's the proof of it.
And this is like, the royal bloodline.
Yeah, the it's now starting through you. And I was like, well, it has nothing to do with my wife being blonde and light skinned, blue eyed. And he was like, no, it's the Basque DNA inside of us. And I'm like, cool. And for my dad, like our last name, Archuleta, was like really important. And he did a lot of history. We went to Colorado on a vacation just to go to Archuleta County that was like in New Mexico and kind of visit some of the areas that where our family came from Spain to America. And it's just a big deal for him. And it always has been. I have our family crest tattooed inside my arm just because it was like, it was pretty cool little thing. So it's kind of been a big deal for us and our family. He had a book, I remember as a kid, and it had like our history.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's doing all this. And one day my grandpa does one of those 23andMe tests. And we come to find out that there is no Basque DNA in the Archuleta name at all.
Like, you're just from Colorado?
Yeah, we're just from Colorado. No, it was like Spain, Portugal, and stuff that. But it was nothing to do with the Basque lineage. And actually, my grandpa was like, we're Italian. And I'm like, so now I'm an Italian. I didn't know that part.
Did that show up on the 23andMe?
A little bit of And he was like, my grandpa's just makes up stuff and is nuts anyways. But like my dad's whole thing was just shattered in this one 23andMe test. But
that's why I won't take one.
You just don't want...
Well, that's one of the reasons I won't take one.
Yourself.
Yeah. I mean, I'm pretty sure I'm Scottish, seeing as how that's where my dad is from.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, if anyone heard your dad talk, they would be pretty sure he's Scottish.
But, like, I've also invested a lot into, like, oh, where my family comes from on the Scottish side, of, like, my name being Njordur.
Yeah.
And if you look at Curry being the anglicized thing of son of Njordur. So it's just like, I'm fully bought into the whole Scottish thing. And if I take one, and it's just like, nah, bro, you're
Irish.
Well, we actually do come from Ireland, if you trace it. So it's from Ireland. So that would make sense. But if it's just like, no, that's not it at all, then I've had other family. I'm like, yeah, I can piece it together with yours. The other part being 23andMe and Shady. If any of you have taken 23andMe, you have to know that they are actually mining your data. They are selling your DNA data. And as of currently, 23andMe is like going broke. And they're telling their investors, don't worry, we can get a lot more money out of this data. So if you've taken one of those and you care about that, maybe you can write them a letter and say, take me off your list.
Probably.
I don't think you can, but mistakes were made.
Yeah.
Good luck.
Yeah, I actually had the lady who does my tattoos. She, while doing one of them, because she could tell I was in pain, was just telling me a very long story. I think, she was like doing her part to help me out. But she said that someone she knew found their real dad.
That happens a lot.
Like, and it just came from like an email got sent, and it was like, this guy's your real dad, and hadn't seen him in ever, or even knew that it was that the real dad was out there.
Like, yeah, that happened to my aunt. Yeah. They found another sibling.
Yeah, it's crazy. So, I mean, there is some helpfulness in it, but for my side of the story, it really was like my dad's whole thing is just blown away, and now he can't tell anyone we're Basque anymore.
So with that, we're calling this episode something like Jesus 23andMe or something
like that? Yeah, something like that.
Something like that?
We'll figure it out.
I want to hop on. Can we remember when we had that cool comic artist that was doing the like episode
pictures
for us when we were doing villains, right?
Yeah, the villains.
Can we still do like episode art?
Maybe.
Can you put it somewhere? Maybe on the Facebook? I want to hop on my AI stuff.
Okay, yeah.
And I'll get Jesus looking at his 23andMe results.
Oh, that would be a good one. That would be fun.
I don't know what it'll look like. Yeah, we'll see what
AI creates.
Yeah, we'll see what happens.
That should
with
be
that.
Interesting to see where it points to.
Yeah.
But yeah, this kind of takes us to this, probably the most fun part of the Bible, genealogies.
Which, if you've come to discover how fun genealogies are, then you might agree a little bit.
Yeah.
If you're 99% of the population, Chris just lied.
Yes. I said it with a smile. Yeah. Because they're just, some of them are long. The ones in Chronicles are long. I know for a long time, it actually put me off on reading Chronicles. Mm-hmm. And now that like I've actually done it again, I'm like, I will grit my teeth through those things or just play the Bible app and let that dude read it as I follow along.
Yeah.
To get to the really good stuff that's in there. But yeah, I mean, throughout the whole Old Testament, it's just genealogies are just littered throughout chunks of it, and they're boring.
But you also have the thing of, like, okay, when you're choosing to record something
mm-hmm.
that will be passed down for what's been thousands of years now, to take the space to just be like, this guy was this guy's dad.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and there's so many of them, just that alone should be like a, okay, yes, they're boring, but they've been chosen to be preserved for mm-hmm. this long. There
yeah.
has to be a meaning, you know? And at least for that to pique the interest of just like, why?
Yeah.
Why?
Yeah, that's always been, I mean, more recently, that's been a thing for me. The hard part about them is just I can't pronounce the names.
That's where you go to the audio Bible and you're just like, you pronounce them.
When I was younger, there was no audio Bible. It was Bible on cassette. But like now it's different. But yeah, pronouncing them was always like, I just felt like I was dumb. I couldn't read. But now, yeah, the investigation of like genealogies and this and that. The hard part is that occasionally you're like, oh, this person's name is in there.
But then there's like 12 people with that name.
Yeah. And it's like, it's not the same guy from the Bible. I think in getting into the part we're looking at with Luke chapter 3, like it mentions Amos.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, we covered famous. Oh, it's not that same Amos.
Yeah.
Not that guy. So that's another part of it that like there are some really cool connections. I'm going through Judges on my own personally. And so they're in the Promised Land now. And it's like the first judge. And I've read this like so many times, but I never put the connection. I can't remember the name. I think it starts with an O, but I never put the connection that it was Caleb's, one of the 12 spies, son-in-law.
Oh, interesting.
And he was, and it says it right there, but like, you know, after you've kind of pulled yourself away from some of that stuff, you don't really pick up on it. And I was like, oh, that's pretty cool. Like the first judge of Israel was Caleb's son-in-law. I mean, after I would assume Joshua. But like, you know, the first one in the book of Judges was him. And I was like, that's pretty cool. So yes, genealogies, when you do start splicing them together and seeing like, oh, this connects to there, they are pretty interesting. But yeah, for the average person, until you get to that point, they're not really all
that fun. I think what you just said there, as far as like, oh, I didn't really notice it before.
Mm-hmm.
I think that in the repetition of reading the Bible so many times to where it becomes familiarized to the point to where, like, okay, I get the stories. I get what's happening. I've learned enough to even make the connections with the stories and the different stuff, mm-hmm. right? Like, it frees your brain to then start seeing the other connections.
Yeah.
Which, yeah, when you look at the names or the tribes or the different stuff, like, that is cool. When you get to the point of just like, oh, like, I was able to see that this time because your brain wasn't trying to figure out, like, what the heck is a judge? Like, he has a gavel?
Right,
like,
right.
You know
yeah,
what I mean?
Yeah.
So in being able to make those connections with names, again, you said that we're going to hop into Luke, but on this journey of discovering a savior,
mm-hmm.
looking at where he comes from, we're going to jump into Luke, but there's also a genealogy in Matthew.
Right.
So when we're looking at these things and kind of going off of that, there are different people within these genealogies. How you were saying like, oh, Amos. Oh, not that Amos.
Yeah.
There are other people who are like, oh, Rahab, and it is that Rahab, and you're able to pull in, you know, those things.
Right, right.
Which is cool, and that's the things going to come full circle on the, that's what makes the genealogies interesting, is when you can get to the point of like, oh, that person who did that thing.
Right.
And that's where this is tracking, and especially with the Old Testament stuff when, say, the Edomites, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you've got like the Edomites coming from Esau, and when you see like how the Edomites are interacting with Israel throughout the Old Testament, you're like, oh, it kind of makes sense, because if you get right. Jacob and Esau and what was going on there.
Yeah.
So when you can start linking them, it's good. It is that maybe second, third, fourth layer of Bible understanding.
Right,
but
yeah.
It is there, and it does influence. So
right, yeah. So we get to this one, and Luke just like interrupts everything. Jesus is just baptized, and right before he gets into the wilderness is this like this small section of, and Jesus was about 30 years old when he started his ministry. And here we go, genealogy. So it's kind of interesting that he interrupts it. And for most of us, it seems odd. Like Matthew's, you talked about, starts at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, here's the genealogy of Jesus. And then here's, I think, the Joseph part, like the story and dream of Joseph.
Yeah, believe so.
And then the birth and then into the other things. But, you know, Luke kind of already established the birth and all that stuff and gets us to this point right here.
So we're talking about this genealogy.
Mm-hmm.
For everybody listening, like, is it worth us reading some of it or reading all of it? Or does that like...
Bible app, that one.
Yeah. Okay. So just know, like, there are some names in this that we will pull out.
Yeah,
but
we'll
rather than
them.
Take the time of just like saying all of these things that we probably wouldn't say very well anyways, it's there. It's like, what, from verse 323 to 38. So that's 15 verses. It's pretty short. You're going to look at it. It says, the son of the son of the son of the son of the son of... That's what we're looking at. And but it's going pretty interestingly from Joseph,
right,
which is Jesus's dad,
mm-hmm.
to it's going in reverse order.
Yes.
So you're starting with Joseph, who's like Jesus' dad, then going backwards in time, going all the way to Adam, but then a step further beyond Adam to mm-hmm. God.
And even Luke makes it, when you're like, it starts at Joseph, he makes a statement in there that's pretty interesting.
Yes.
He was the son of, as was supposed, Joseph. So he comes in there like talking about like, Jesus, the son of, as was supposed, Joseph for a reason.
Yeah. So you got it's kind of in parentheses, right? Mm-hmm. So just to read it. Jesus, when he began his ministry, was about 30 years of age, being the son, parentheses, as was supposed, of Joseph, the son of Heli. So, yeah, that as was supposed, I'm not sure if you picked up on this, but the way that Luke uses this, because, again, Luke wrote Luke and Acts,
mm-hmm.
it's kind of like whenever he uses it, it's a, they assumed, but they were assuming wrongly, or there's actually more to the story. So he's like, yeah, we're going to set this thing up like, you know, Jesus, the mm-hmm. son of, well, you think he's the son of Joseph, mm-hmm. who was the son of Eli, but like, let me tell you more about this.
Yeah, it's like a foreshadowing before he even gets into the nitty gritty of who Jesus was.
Right.
Yeah, because everyone was just viewing Jesus as an ordinary person, the son of Joseph, and Luke is like, hey, I'm going to give my readers the correct view out the gate. So as you're reading this, you may have a preconceived notion that this was Joseph's son, but really I'm pointing it back to, like you said, that list of goes all the ways to God,
mm-hmm.
That this is the son of God. And Luke is pretty different than most of the other genealogies, because usually it's like, was the father of type thing. And I'm pretty sure, but not 100, but Luke is one of the only ones that uses the son of instead of father of.
I believe that there is a spot in First Chronicles
that also son
that,
of?
That talks about son, but yeah, most of the other ones are father.
Father of. And I really believe, because what he's getting at is he's making this long connection as you're going through this lineage of people and everything, and there's little connections into David and other people, but he is taking this all the way back to like say, hey, this is Jesus, son of God, and putting it in there because I believe it's an important question that changes everything. Even when we get into like, where this is placed, we have the baptism and then the temptation, right? So the baptism is the voice that says, this is my son, whom I'm well pleased, you know, right? And we have that story. And then Luke gets into the, this is the son of, the son of, the son of, and always point to God. And then we get, and we'll check it out later, the temptation. And in the temptation, what's the question Satan's asking? If you are the son of God, if you are the son of God, right? So this question of who his identity is and who Jesus really was is important. I think it's still the question that we all face and are challenged with every day is he the son of God? Because if he is the son of God, then he's Lord of my life. But if he's not, then I kind of get to do and live the way I want to.
Yeah, so the placement there, how you're pulling out that you have, and I didn't want to gloss over it so quickly because you pulled it on and it is there, is that just previously, like if you go back to our last mm-hmm. episode talking about Jesus being baptized and after the baptism from heaven, God the Father saying, this is my son.
Right.
And then literally just after this, Holy Spirit leads Jesus away into the wilderness and he's tempted. And like right off the bat, devil says to him, if you are the son of God. Mm-hmm. So it really is immediately sandwiched between these two, Jesus being the son of God.
Right, yeah.
Which, looking at the placement, you brought up Matthew being, oh, genealogy goes at the beginning, mm-hmm. which is where you would think it would make sense. Like, oh, here's infant Jesus. Mm-hmm. Here's the genealogy of which. Where you have Luke bringing it in is kind of similar to what you would have in the Old Testament would say. So like Noah's genealogy in Genesis 5 goes from like straight up Adam to Noah.
Right.
And
yeah.
then you get into Noah's story. So it's like mm-hmm. baby Noah and here's going on. But also in Genesis, you would have going back to Esau and his genealogy. You don't get Esau's genealogy right at the beginning. You get it later on in Genesis to explain that like, here's where the Edomites came from.
Right, yeah.
So it's really the genealogy can serve a function like explaining, again, that tie-in to like, why is this important right now?
Right, yeah.
So I think that that's really hitting again. So he's the son of God. Now let's actually break into showing that he is right. the son of God.
And why is that important right here at that point?
Yeah.
Because yeah, you have Matthew's who starts and then Matthew does baptism, temptation. And Mark does the same thing. Mark has no genealogy yeah. though, but it's like baptism, temptation. So why was Luke looking at it from this perspective, like this is where I have to put it in at? And I read somewhere where like some people thought that Luke actually started at chapter 3 mm-hmm. with the genealogy or the baptism and then the genealogy and then like this other stuff was added later. I don't know. Enough scholars said that that may not be the case. I really just think like Luke had a purpose.
Yeah.
I make this connection and I got this. It was Philo would about Adam say that his father was no mortal but the eternal God. So Philo would then go on and talk about Adam's failure not to follow in God's footsteps, but really you then see Luke showing Jesus following God's footsteps, not giving in to the temptation.
Right.
And this really is a lot of what you would hear from Paul, right? Paul always takes things like to Jesus, the new Adam.
Mm-hmm.
And so if, again, we're making the connection that Paul and Luke were hanging out together, this is the reason why Luke, you can see Luke putting this together as like, hey, we got to take it back to the beginning because taking it back this far is really going to show you that this genealogy that started, that ends with Jesus, that started with Adam, actually goes a step further and it goes to God at the beginning of everything. So he takes it all the ways back. He's connecting this family tree to the very beginning.
That's where you get with Matthew. Matthew's genealogy goes as far as Abraham.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one of the differences here is Matthew, again, for a purpose, brings him back to Abraham. But Luke, for a purpose, brings it back to Adam. And as I was looking, I came across that same thing of like, oh, bring it back to Adam, which Adam was the son of God. And then you have here Jesus being called the son of God and how you said like being the second Adam. And I get it for like commentary type purposes, like in a scholarly world, you can't say or you shouldn't say more than what the text says.
Mm-hmm.
So they look at, hey, within what we know of Luke's writings, he doesn't seem to promote a theology of the second Adam, which is true. If you look in Luke and Acts,
right, yeah.
that's not a thing that gets put out there. But it's also like, but yes, if he is familiar with the theologies that Paul was talking mm-hmm. about and kind of what the reality of it was, it would make sense that he could make that tie.
Mm-hmm.
But it's kind of like a detective. Like, unless you have the evidence, you can't really yeah, submit it in yeah. as far as that goes. But that's where I track with it. I really see it going back to like, no, this is taking it all the way back. And really, even there, I see it pulling the double duty of not just saying, like, this is the Son of God, but truly linking Jesus in with humanity.
Yeah, and I think that's the important part. Because when you look at who Matthew was writing to, his audience, it was Jews. Mark, somewhat the same thing. Luke is writing to Gentiles, to people not within the nation of Israel. So what he's showing here is that this story of redemption, it's not just for Israel.
Mm-hmm.
It's for everybody. So this is for the Jews. It's for the Gentiles. It's for the Romans, for the Greeks, and it's for us today. It's for everybody. It's this expansion of what the Jewish nation was looking for. They were looking for the Messiah. The Messiah would just be for them and take them out of oppression from Rome. What Luke is really driving at is the Messiah is here to take us out of the oppression of sin and everything that comes with it, and then freeing us to be part of his family. So everybody benefits from what Jesus was coming to do.
Yeah, and I think that we'll talk more about it there, because you brought in a kind of a purpose there.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so he's writing to Gentiles and being able to show that salvation is for all versus Matthew writing largely, you know, to Jews and kind of what he's bringing out. And I think that as we get further into these talks, I'm not sure how much detail we'll go into, is that where it seems like maybe there's some conflict between the two genealogies, or even looking into, like, there's some really in-depth study as far as just like, well, that name wasn't used during that time.
Right,
so that's
right.
Anachronistic to put into there, and like all this stuff. It's like we need to keep in mind that they're not writing this to appease our modern sense of what we think it should be.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it is being written for a purpose, but it's also not just a literary device of like, oh, let's just take him back to Adam to show that salvation, like, there is a historicity there as well.
Yeah.
So I think that to our modern mind, when we're looking at a genealogy where we could say like, well, there's two genealogies, they should match up and there should be this and there should be that. It's just like, we need to allow it to be like what it is.
Yeah.
And not be like, well, that's just an excuse for it not being real, because there is things that are verifiable within it as well.
Yeah. And I think that's a really good point, because when you look at it, like the Jewish people, we've even talked about, they are really focused on family history.
Mm-hmm.
And for very good reason, the promise given to Abraham, that's why Matthew goes to Abraham. That's where the promise was given and his descendants for this like everlasting blessing. So their genealogy was important to them. And despite wars or being forced out of their land or even attempt to wipe them all out, as we've seen in modern history, they've held on to the memory and the stories of their ancestors and their timeline. In the Old Testament, the Book of Chronicles, like I talked about, starts with a bunch of chapters listing names, which, again, is boring to some of us, but back then it was super important because it was tying everything back to the beginning. So they needed to know where they came from, which group of the 12 tribes they belonged to. So we look at, you know, like a 23andMe, and you're like, hey, that thing's kind of shady sometimes too. And yeah, it's kind of hard to determine where everyone actually came from. But for them, like, they knew who they came from.
Yeah, and looking at where they came from, well, I want to tie in a few different concepts right here, because just like you have at the beginning of this genealogy, they're like, yeah, like, it was supposed he was coming from Joseph.
Right.
Like, let's really tell you where this is coming from. A huge thing about sonship as well is shown by, like, the likeness of the child to the father, through action and behavior. So when we're looking at this thing of, like, this is my son who I'm well pleased, and, like, being the son of God versus, say, the children of Abraham, right? Jesus later on would be like, you're sons of your father, the devil.
Right, yeah.
And when you bring in this thing of sonship really being about like, no, who are you actually obedient to and submitting yourself to, and that you are living your life like them? So these concepts are also being wrapped into this idea as well. So you have the baptism, this is my son who I'm well pleased, and we've talked so much about Jesus being obedient to all things, right? So you have him being obedient and you have him being the son of God, but that's not just to say that, oh, so this is just a title given to him. He's the son of God because he was so obedient to him. So like he looks, you know, he's carrying that out. But in the genealogy, you get like even, yeah. So you think that the human man, Joseph, is his father. We're really trying to show you how this is, I guess what I'm trying to say is like how much this is in support of what we've already covered earlier with the virgin birth.
Mm-hmm.
So you have all of these concepts coming together. Like, no, it was truly of the Holy Spirit that Mary became pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
And then it really is true that in another concept, he is the son of God through his obedience. Like, it's all working together. And I guess I'm trying to bring that out because those are kind of foreign concepts at times.
Yeah, if you're looking at like the first three chapters as like, I guess, the thesis of what Luke was saying.
Yeah.
And then the genealogy is like the big exclamation mark on that thesis. From chapters 4 to the finish of Luke, which was it like 20-something chapters?
Mm-hmm.
That's then the, here's the proof of my thesis.
Mm.
Here's the thesis, son of God, virgin birth, and it's repeated over and over throughout those chapters. And then, now let me show you why he's the Son of God, or let me show you the proof of it. And it's, you know, the temptation and the miracles and the teaching and his lifestyle, his actions. I really am glad you brought that up, because even we're covering 1 John in our church.
Yep.
And the section that was taught on Sunday was about Cain. And it said Cain belonged to the evil one,
mm-hmm.
right? He belonged to it. And the example was used of Cain because of what he did, his actions. So it is a lot of, you know, what we say and then followed by what we do is really going to tell the difference.
I was going to touch on this earlier, but you brought it back in. I'm actually preaching this Sunday on a section in 1 John, and it's talking about those that are false prophets and come in the spirit of the Antichrist, right?
Mm-hmm.
But the way that you know what's true when you're testing the spirits is that they confess that Jesus actually came in the flesh.
Mm.
And how much him actually coming in the flesh is like a marker of the truth,
right,
about all of this.
Mm-hmm.
So when you look at, yes, this Son of God that truly came and was incarnate, that's so much of what we're saying happened here in the first three chapters, right? Born of Mary, an actual physical man that walked this earth, came in the flesh, and that's where you get this genealogy mm-hmm. going, like, look, this line goes all the way back to Adam. Like, there are human beings, and Jesus is a human being.
Right.
But you're also getting this switch to where, yes, human being born of God,
mm-hmm.
traced back to God.
I got just a weird, interesting thing that I found in my study, and then I'll go through some of the people.
That's what we're here for.
That is. Luke's genealogy, there are 78 names that run from Jesus to creation.
Mm-hmm.
The theory is that divides the list of 77 names into 11 groups of seven names each.
Real quick, because you said there's 78 names, but that's 78 including God.
Jesus. Or God.
I'm pretty sure it's 78 including God.
Yeah, yeah,
because
yeah.
if you go back to Adam, yeah. then it's 77
right,
that you
right,
can
yeah,
split
yeah,
into
yeah.
the 11.
Yeah,
yeah.
Correct. So these 11 groups represent the 11 weeks of world history. And this is where you're correct, because I just saw this on my notes. And Jesus, the 78th name, begins the 12th period of world history. And this is all according to 2nd Esdras.
Yeah, so the Messianic weeks.
Yeah.
You'd have the 11 weeks, and then you get into mm-hmm. the 12th week. And 2nd Esdras... we didn't do that on our excluded books.
We didn't.
So I guess we're just dropping that for some future time. But 2nd Esdras, yeah. man, that is a book right there. Getting into that, like that's one, it's kind of like an Enoch type book.
Yeah.
To where you
yeah.
read it and you're like, this is starting to fill in some pretty crazy blanks right now.
Yeah. I mean, if anyone listened to our Enoch part, you could tell that we got wore out a little bit on that. So maybe we'll save 2nd Esdras. If anything, I want to get into next would be the
patriarchs,
yes, the prophecy of the 12 patriarchs. Anyways, I mean, guess it kind of ties in here with genealogy because we'll get through one of them. But some of the people listed, we've talked about this guy before, Zerubbabel. There it is, governor, king when they returned from the exile. So we talked about him in the forgotten books. I want to say Haggai was the one that we went over with him, but I mean, just go back to our forgotten books, look for the old minor prophets, and you'll find
yeah,
him.
Yeah, I want to say Zerubbabel was linked up, and he was more of the political power, and then he was linked up with one of the prophets who was
right.
more in the prophetic,
yeah.
and they've kind of partnered up and played those two roles.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then his dad, Shealtiel, again, this is why we didn't read him, but he was actually a priest mentioned in Ezra 3:2. And then his dad is Neri.
I think Ezra was the prophet. I think it was Ezra. Did we cover Ezra in the Forgotten?
No.
But they all kind of talked about
yeah,
that post.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Then his dad is mentioned after him, and it's Neri. But this is where it gets into some of the weird things like you had talked about. Was according to 1 Chronicles 3, Jehoiakim is the father of Zerubbabel's dad. And the judgment given to Jehoiakim, one of the bad kings in Jeremiah 22, may be the reason for that. And it was basically like, none of your descendants will. So it was almost like they just kind of threw in a filler name to erase this person out of the lineage.
Yeah, I think coming from that, because we're working backwards, because
yeah.
you're following an order, but then you're working backwards because you have David being on the throne, right? And
mm-hmm.
then you would have Solomon being on the throne.
Yeah, I'm working it from the list mentioned.
Yeah, but
yeah.
tracking with what you're saying is just like, because this one includes Nathan as the son of David
right.
rather than Solomon. So if you track what happened with Solomon and kind of like that's why all of that fell apart within
mm-hmm.
the kingdoms of Israel, right? And then you get further on to Jehoiakim or Kim,
mm-hmm.
Jehoiakim. And yeah, that's made that, hey, nobody from this line is going to sit on the throne again. It is kind of that, like, yeah, that's why they aren't part of this genealogy.
Right.
Because Jesus does sit on the throne, but he is coming from David. So it is mm-hmm. tracking a different bloodline, so to speak,
right,
coming
yeah.
through there. Yeah.
Yeah. And that was one of the next one I was going to bring up too, because Matthew's genealogy would use Solomon instead of Nathan. And so Nathan is David's third son. Someone put the idea maybe that they use Nathan to use it to show the prophetic connection to Jesus, like Nathan the prophet who came and told David that he was wrong.
But Nathan's son wasn't the prophet.
Right, right.
Or sorry, David's son Nathan wasn't the prophet.
But it's just kind of like...
But when you look at the ties that are happening
yeah,
there.
Yeah, so that's an idea. The other idea is that Nathan was used because of the absence of trying to canceling out the line. And this, what I think was probably more what I would see it as, is like with a lot of ancient people and remote tribes, sometimes their lineage can come from different avenues in different ways because mm-hmm. of the intermarrying. So it could be like Nathan was still tracking down that same lineage, even though Solomon was taking it. Like both roads eventually took you to Jesus.
Yeah, and what you have too, because Luke's genealogy is longer than Matthew's considerably.
Yeah,
is that you do have more people in there,
mm-hmm.
and sometimes when you're looking at genealogies, have been put out there that kind of you can skip over the in-between people who mm-hmm. maybe aren't serving the purposes of what it is that you're trying to put across.
Right.
You know, it's not that there wasn't different people in there. It's just, so when you go like the son of, it's like, yes, you're in the line of that person,
mm-hmm.
but we're not going to necessarily give you like the son of being more like the descendant of, rather than like, right, no, this yeah. is actually literally my son.
Yeah. I think from what I read was from Abraham to Jesus, Luke gives 57 names, while Matthew only gives 41.
Yeah.
So it is considerably longer. But yeah, there's Nathan took us to David. So King David, we all know the great King David, who conquered Goliath, who became king from running
drove out
from
Philistines, yeah.
yeah, and drove out the Philistines. They had the song, if Saul killed, what was it, 1,000, David his 10,000.
Yep.
So the great king, but also the guy who murdered Uriah, had an affair with Bathsheba, did some pretty crazy, shady stuff. If you read some of Samuel, when it gets to like when he was working with the Philistine king,
mm-hmm.
and he was like, hey David, where'd you go? And he was like, oh, I went over there raiding these towns over there, and you know, we did that. And he was like, oh, okay. But like when he, what he was actually doing was taking out the enemy.
Yeah,
he was wiping them out completely. But it also was kind of shady the way he was doing it.
So we get like David, for he's called a man after God's own heart,
mm-hmm.
which I know that throws people off when you get all of this shady stuff that he did. And I was like, that's because he never turned to other gods.
Right.
If you go back to that young David who was just like, this Goliath guy is calling out our God and calling out all, like, what are you, like, what are we thinking? Like, our God, like, God of Israel is the God. So, like, I'll go down and kill him because, like, God's got our back. David never turned away from that.
Right.
God yeah. was always God. He was always after God's heart, right? So, just like, that was there. Sin happened, which he's human mm-hmm. and, like, sin happened. But because of that sin, like, you get to that point where David in his life is just like, I'm in this palace. Why does God not have a house?
Right, yeah.
Equally as great. And, like, he's like, I want to build this awesome house for God. And God's just like, you're not the guy.
Mm-hmm.
Like, look at the life that you've lived. Like, your hands are covered in blood. Mm-hmm. Like, you're not the one that's going to build me this house. Like, I'll let your son do it, but not for you.
Yeah.
So it's even interesting there that when you're bringing up these things that he did, like, yeah, there's consequence.
Yeah.
Even
yeah.
in the eyes of God. It's not just like, David had the power to pull together all the resources and do all the stuff, but he's just like, nope.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really interesting. You got Boaz in there, and so he's the husband of Ruth. We'll talk more about that a little bit later.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's Perez, and that's the son of Judah and Tamar. Again, I'll get into a little bit more about the women in Matthew's genealogy in a second. But then there's Judah, who's one of the 12. And Judah, we'll talk a little about what he did with Tamar
yep.
in a second. But then you have, you know, the patriarchs, Jacob, Isaac, and Abraham. Again, all of them had these really great moments, these bad moments. I mean, if any of them, Isaac probably only, there's one mention of him kind of doing the same thing his dad did of lying
to
a king.
It's crazy to me that for like as big of a hype and a buildup that you get like, Abraham, you're going to have this son, mm-hmm. the promised one, all this stuff. Isaac's story is like a blip.
It's so quick.
Yeah.
And it's like,
you're like, man, here's the one. And mm-hmm. just kind of like, cool. And then Isaac, and then he had his kids, and then everything happened.
And then you get into this long thing of what Jacob was running around doing in yep. the deceiver. Yeah. And then Joseph is even longer. Then there's Noah, the man who built the ark and had his incident of drinking of the vineyard, of the vine, that led to some wild stuff. And I don't, we've covered some of it, but I'm not going to get into much more of it. Then there's Enoch, who walked with God. Go back to our first Enoch episodes. Then Seth, who was the kid born after Cain and Abel debacle. And then you get to Adam, who obviously was part of the reason why he got exiled out of paradise. So in this lineage, I point out some of this just because there wasn't this perfect, like, divine line of like these great people doing great things. It was some messed up people. I mentioned briefly, let's go back to Bathsheba, right? So she's in Matthew's genealogy.
Mm-hmm.
But if you go to 2 Samuel, she was originally Uriah the Hittite's wife. And David had an affair with her and then killed Uriah, and that child, you know, was born to them, ended up dying, but then came Solomon. Ruth, other than she was a Moabite, but she was mentioned in there. Rahab was a prostitute in Canaan, and she ended up in David's lineage, or in Jesus's lineage. And then there's Tamar, who was Judah's daughter-in-law. And if correct me if I'm wrong with the story, but she was married to one of his sons. He died.
Mm-hmm.
So then by law or by custom, the son after that had to fulfill the right and give her a child.
But that son was really young.
Mm-hmm. I think there's one in between, right? Was there one and he like spilled his seed?
No, I think that's Onan.
Okay, so yeah. So
That might be the same story, but I'm
yeah, so like that. Either way, the one was really young and Judah's like, okay, maybe I'll give you him when he gets older.
Maybe Onan was in between off the top of my head. Yeah. I'm not remembering.
But I think another one in between, Onan, died because mm-hmm. he did that, and it was like wrong for him to have done that. Because back then, the only way a woman would have part of the inheritance was through an offspring. So then, to complete that thought,
if that Onan had followed through, he wouldn't have been the recipient of the inheritance in that
right.
way. So he's just basically like, well, yeah, if I don't get her pregnant, then
I get the full inheritance instead of a yeah. partial inheritance. Yeah. So he ends up dying. Then the younger son was like too young. So Judah's like, when he gets older, I'll have you, you know, he'll fulfill that obligation. And then he never did. And then Tamar dressed like a prostitute. When Judah came into the town, he saw her, slept with her. She ended up having Perez. So like, that's Jesus's family history.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like this is the lineage that comes from it. And one of the reasons I bring all this up is just really because of the idea that it wasn't perfect. And I think sometimes we get caught up with the idea of like what my past was or my family and what they've done. Like I can't get out of that shame spiral. And what Luke is doing here, right? He's kind of making the connection of taking everything back to who Jesus is, the Son of God. And the enemy kind of wants to keep us trapped in our past of what we've done and who we are and what our family's done in that history. And sometimes in that we forget who we really are. We're children of God. When Jesus became Son of God and we are co-heirs to that title as well, children of God. And that's the important thing of this. You know, I love that where Luke put it, it kind of gives that separation, it gives that gap, and he puts an emphasis on something. A lot of this that I didn't even recognize until we did the study on it. So now when I read it, it's going to be way cooler.
I think that's us doing this podcast is literally just us like, oh, wow, we wouldn't have known I mean, obviously, a lot of it's building on stuff that we already know.
Yeah.
But I think that every single episode, we're both just like, yeah, I totally wouldn't have known that if we didn't do this. So, yeah, I guess we just happen to have an audience, but it's literally just me and you. Like,
yeah,
this is where we started. Yeah. Like, hey, let's have Bible studies and get in and
let's learn.
Did you know about this?
Right. I like the way N.T. Wright puts it, too. And he wraps up this whole chapter. He says, together, the baptism story and the family tree tell us where Jesus has come from, who he is, and where he's going. As we make his story our own in our own prayers and indeed in our own baptism, we too should expect both the fresh energy of the Spirit and the quiet voice which reminds us of God's amazing, affirming love of the path of vocation which lies ahead. And I really like the way he put that, because that's really, to me, kind of why I said the thing, what I just said, of like the reminder that we are God's children. Mm-hmm. That this is a good reminder that as we've been baptized into it and as the Spirit takes over, yeah, we're on that same path. We're the child of God. And a lot of times we get caught up in shame and how can I move past what I've done? And God's like, I'm right here. It's the prodigal son story, which, you know, is one of the coolest things in Luke's gospel, is the father waiting for his son to come back to him. And this is just a reminder that Jesus, being the Son of God, very, very important theological point. Very important. But what we benefit from his obedience from Luke 1 to here is that we're all part of that family as well now.
It's crazy to me that as you get, sorry, going back to, because we've been in 1 John and looking at that, some of the stuff, and when you look at what's going on with the early church and kind of the theological battles that they were having, mm-hmm. It was a lot easier for people to take on back then that like Jesus was the Son of God. And they were just like, no, yeah, cool. Spiritual being.
Right.
All for that. But he wasn't actually human.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's a weird thing that for them, it was just like they were erasing the human part that was going on. And for so much today, I feel like the argument would be like, oh yeah, Jesus, human, sure. If you can get to the point of believing that he actually existed, which at this point with even atheistic scholars are looking at, there's evidence that Jesus was a historical person. So like, if you don't have that, go figure it out. But they're like, but I don't really know if I can believe that he was the Son of God.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just weird how we've gotten how it flipped. That backwards. Yeah. Yeah, huge theological point, but both of those points, which we get in this genealogy, Son of God coming from God, also fully human coming from Joseph, Mary, mm-hmm. right? All the way back to Adam. So there's that point. And I kind of circling back around how you're talking that identity piece, right? Of being son, for us to be children of God, which Jesus puts it as simply as for all those who believe, they are given the right to be counted as children of God.
Yeah.
And what we get to as we build that out, right? So just like that is a truth in and of itself, but then what does that look like and what does that mean? And as you grow and we get through like Jesus's talk with Nicodemus, that you have to be born again. And you get other things from Jesus, then you get from the disciples and especially from Paul coming into like what that means to have been spiritually dead and then be brought to life, right? And all of these things that come into play. And I think that that's the really important thing where you get, okay, in Adam, all sinned, mm-hmm. right? All the shame, all the guilt, all the condemnation, all the everything coming from our birth into humanity through Adam and our own sin coming from that, right? But for as much as we can possibly fully grasp and live in the reality that Jesus being the second Adam, Jesus being like the, we are now starting over with humanity and what humanity can look like and redeeming humanity from Adam and making humanity Christ-like. And that in that belief, we are born into that is like, whereas we get here, Jesus looking at his genealogy going back, and you were saying like, we can look at our family going back mm-hmm. and like what I was raised in, what I went through and all the things that happened to me when I was a kid that made me be the way that I am, right?
Right.
But it's like, okay, but what happens when your genealogy starts over because you were born into Christ?
Mm-hmm.
Because now look at your genealogy. It's Jesus and the Father.
Mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah, yeah.
Or not even Jesus. He's your brother, right? Mm-hmm. You're now a son of God like Jesus is, yeah. And you are now. And that reality of being born in the image and the likeness of God, to have that likeness being restored. Again, it's that crazy reality that like, for as much as we can possibly grasp it, we will find it to be true.
Yeah.
We're like, yeah, your childhood doesn't really matter in the lights of that. Like God will use it and be able to do that, but like it's fully restored and redeemed
mm-hmm.
for as much as you'll actually believe that and operate from that place.
Mark Clark's book, The Problem of Jesus, he has the chapter on miracles. Mm-hmm. And one of the big miracles that he just really focuses on is the water to wine.
Mm.
Get to Jesus,
which is interesting
one.
Because like it's the first one, but it's all like weird flex.
It's, yeah, right. but he really emphasizes on the idea of the jars were purifying ritual jars.
Mm.
So they were just jars used to purify things. But with Jesus changing the water into wine in those jars, like he made the big idea in connection of out kind of with the old and in with the new. Like, here's the new way of living. Here's the new commands. Here's all this new that Jesus is bringing. Almost like you were saying, that fresh start, or like what Second Esther says, like, here's the new week. Here's the beginning of it. And really, that's kind of what happens when I love that you really clarified what I was saying way better, that when we accept Jesus, it's now it's me, God, like that everything in between, all the mess and all the crap that was in my life and all the stuff that I was just embarrassed of, done with. It takes us straight to the Father. And that's what, you know, those ritual purifying things were a way to get yourself clean, to be in the presence of the community, that even if you went into like close to like the tabernacle and sacrifices, you would be clean to do that. But Jesus was like kind of doing away with that idea and saying, it's me, I cleanse you. Now you have this connect straight line to the Father.
You're sending me off on a thing that this, I'll preface, this is just my thoughts connecting based off of what you're saying. I haven't read that part of the Mark Clark book and I don't know the background of things, but if you're looking at like those being ritual water, right? And that's the cleansing. And then it being wine, like we were just talking about with the baptism, right? Of John saying like, I'll baptize you in water, but he's going to baptize you with the Spirit. And when you look at the old way of being cleansed, of being cool, the water and the ritual,
right?
But so much the Holy Spirit being referenced as wine. And like when we receive the Holy Spirit, that's what makes us children of God.
Yeah.
That's what does the purifying, and that's what gives us life and does all that. We are now able to walk in the Spirit, whereas before we didn't have the Spirit, so we were just walking in the flesh. So to really take those points together, just like, yeah, as children of God, because we have the Holy Spirit, whereas Jesus was born of the Spirit and lived by the Spirit, we get to receive that Spirit and then begin walking in it. Like it is that new life that comes in.
Yeah, it's good stuff.
And that's where these things aren't theological points or just random things that we do because we're Christian. Like, think about when Jesus teaches us to pray and he says, our Father, as those that have received the Holy Spirit, again, for as much as possible, we really need to get it in our minds that, like, no, God is our Father. Like, we are created by God, coming from God, and like, kind of like what it says here, like, you know, being the son of, well, supposedly Joseph, I can almost be like, well, yeah, like Murdoch, he's the son of, you know, supposedly Bill.
Yeah.
But he's received the Spirit, so he's really God's son.
Yeah.
And for the more that I can actually live in that as a reality and not just like a, oh, well, I'm trying, or it'd be nice if I could be a better Christian or whatever, but just being like, no, what does it mean that I'm a son of God?
Right.
Because I can see it perfectly in Jesus. I'm trying to see it more in myself.
That's really good. All right, what's next week?
Well, next week we're going to be led by the devil.
All right.
The episode is led by the devil.
Led by the devil. Welcome to Your Church Friends Podcast, led by the devil. That's how I should start next week. That will either get a lot of listening or like automatic turned off.
What's great is this was a, I don't know how long we've been going, but it's an episode on a genealogy, which hopefully made it interesting enough that people are still here, but there's a chance that people got bored and cut it off. So they're not going to know that's what's happening. So if you start it off that way next week, they're not going to know.
They won't know a thing. Yeah.
They're just like, I knew it. I knew that's what these people, first they get into Enoch and now they're talking about being led.
It's always Enoch. Enoch takes you straight, straight into like being led by the devil, us false teachers.
We're not even good at it. We're just saying it outright.
We're not even hiding it like some other people that who won't be named. But yeah, that's next week. So let's wrap this one up. I'm Chris.
I'm Jurdach.
We are Your Church Friends. Thanks for listening.